Welcome back to the USL Way, where we have more episodes released than the El Paso Locomotive have wins this season. We are back for, I believe, we're getting up into the high 60s now. That's besides the point. I am, of course, Ben, and we are here with Noah, as per usual.
See, I think their easiest match probably was us, and they still only got a draw from that. But yeah, you gotta feel for El Paso and their fans, because it's the second year straight going where they had three matches at home to start the season, and they barely have anything to show for it. So, yeah. I don't want to bash El Paso like I did Las Vegas, because, like, I don't know, I just have a soft spot for El Paso.
Me too. It was definitely we definitely carried over that craziness from week one into week two. I mean, you're going to get that when you have, I believe it was five teams starting their season this week, and then you have another couple teams out of action, like Hartford, who played in week one but don't play here. It was wild. And I think the first one that we really have to pinpoint is Rhode Island's debut into the USL Championship. And this is what you want from a debut game, a sellout, damn near 5,000. I think it was just around 4,900 is what I saw. But beautiful scene. You have to love, of course, the big pole in the middle of the camera for some shots. You don't get more USL than that. An absolute beautiful play from Rhode Island in their first ever game. Of note, good players. Colin Rocha hit the post twice. Already looks like an elite creator, an elite attacking midfielder, kind of coming off of that center mid role going forward. And that's what you love to see, because he's still young, and having him be so dynamic for a team that needs it, that's perfect. Noah Fusan also looks good as well up top, just as a creative striker. And I mean, I don't think we can hit on how good Rhode Island actually are, like, from the start. Because New Mexico are by no means a pushover team, and they dominated for what it felt like 70 minutes there, at least.
Yeah, I mean, they were super unlucky to not come away with 3 points as well, as you kind of mentioned, hitting the post two times, and then also hitting the crossbar off of one of those shots that hit the post as well. So, I mean, really for them, it's about as good of a start as you could ask for, given the fact that, yes, you were unlucky in the end to not get 3 points and then went down 1-0. But then you found the equalizer at home. You get a point out of it. And in the end, it's still a relatively good start to the season. But, you know, I really like the way New Mexico are playing as well, because, again, they come into the season, as I kind of mentioned, it felt like they were lacking a little bit of identity in a sense, and they were kind of almost crying out for some sort of quality in certain places. And I think Marco Micheletto has come in, done a tremendous job in that aspect. Greg Hurst looks like he's back to his best, right? And Alex Tamboxis has been really good to start the season as well. Keeps them in that match 100% and earns them a point. And on the road, going to an expansion side that's playing in their first ever match, a point is really good. That's a really good result for New Mexico, especially since we were talking about it off air. That match for New Mexico starts a stretch of 6 games out of 7 on the road. So that's a tremendous start for New Mexico.
Absolutely. And I mean, like you said, taking a result like this with that away stand, what do you think that does for New Mexico here, like, going forward? Like, does that make the next coming, like you said, 7-8 weeks more palatable? Meaning, like, okay, we started off in a hot environment. We knew it was going to be rowdy. We knew it was going to be crazy. We knew Rhode Island were going to be energized, and now they're taking that on the road. Like, do you think that will kind of push them through a bit more than if they would have lost?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's like, It's character building in a sense. It's how you really gel as a team and fight for one another on the pitch and get through times that, can look like Monterrey Bay FC in their first ever season, where you start out six games on the road to start a season. Obviously, New Mexico played Pittsburgh at home, but like, seven out of nine or whatever to start the year on the road, that is a really tough proposition. It really is. So yeah, I'd say it does wonders for them in a sense, because it instills that belief in you. It instills that belief in the fans that, hey, we can go anywhere and we can get a result, an important result at that, because any point in the USL Championship, especially on the road, it matters a lot.
Yeah, and Rhode Island too, we can say they now have a two-game away stand to take on against two pretty heavy oppositions here early on. We'll throw in Monterey Bay there. They played phenomenally against Phoenix, to be honest. I mean, that's about as professional as a performance I think Monterey Bay have put in months going back to last season. And we were also saying off camera how, and we got a question about this as well, about Phoenix's goal scoring capabilities this year. This is one of the things that I highlighted coming in, is that they lost a lot of attacking talent, especially in Danny Trejo, who was phenomenal in that playoff run that got them to the USL title, and towards the back end of last season. They don't return him, and they bring in, like, it almost feels like a brand new front line with Remy Cabral kind of spearheading it now. You still have Formella who's able to come in there, but I do think Phoenix have regressed in a lot of areas going forward. And that kind of helps with Monterey Bay shutting them out, but it's still, and you'll agree with me, I mean, I know you'll go off with it, but it's one of the best performances I've seen from them in ages. And I'm so happy about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, that's about as happiest as I've ever been as a Monterrey Bay FC fan after a match. And again, just kind of like coming into the season, there was pessimism, kind of some predictions in a sense from, I mean, John Morrissey and Nicholas Murray. They thought that we were going to be a potentially a basement dweller. Potentially, right? And I mean, you said you believed in us, but I even said, like, I have my own concerns in a sense that, like, have we added enough in a Western Conference that simply just keeps getting better? And it is clear and evident from the first two matches we played, rest assured, those concerns have been put to bed, because the quality we have in that midfield and the back line is just incredible. Baka, Fair, and Rebelar. That midfield three has been spectacular, especially dropping into defense. And then when we're in possession, Baka basically drops and creates a back five slash back three with Doner and the left back pushing up on the left, which in this match, it was Martinez because Robinson was a late scratch. And I honestly think that Wolmer, he is naturally a winger. Probably, I'd say, right wing, left wing. But even last night, him on the back line at left back, phenomenal. Guzman and Green, impeccable. Didn't really put a foot wrong, I'd say. And then Doner was Mauri Doner at its finest. I think maybe at times missed a few passes down the right to Chuy, who was potentially in behind down that right side. But other than that, we were solid. We kept the ball. And I think the biggest talking point is that press. That press turned Phoenix over a good seven times at least. And just we kept pummeling them with that press. First 30 minutes, they couldn't get out. They barely enjoyed any possession of the ball. And if they did, it was in their own defensive half, in which we would just win the ball back, right? And in that sense, we had more chances that we could have capitalized off of, and we didn't. So it should have been more, to be honest. Specifically, the clip ball across back into the 18 by Chuy, where Dixon headed over the bar, he's got to finish that. And I think in terms of the only players that are out of form currently, Alex Dickson is a little out of form, but that's just like super nitpicking, and I trust he'll come good,
Yeah,
right?
he
He's
will.
a veteran of this league. He is our golden boot scorer from last season with 12 goals. But then you bring in guys like Tristan Traeger, Luther Archimed, and I thought Archimed last night, even though some ratings and apps didn't necessarily rate his performance, it was like a 6.3 on FootMob. I thought his hold up play was excellent. Ran really hard, and he's exactly what we needed up top, as well as Tristan Traeger, who is even more dynamic than him, I'd say. So yeah, just again, the concerns I had and other people had have definitely been put to bed, I'd say. And for once, we can be kind of looking up the table, I'd say, and really just kind of being like, how far can this take us?
Absolutely. I mean, already near the top of the Western Conference, you got to take that to.
Well, joint top of the Western Conference, to
There
be
you
fair.
go. There
We're
you go.
technically fourth, probably because fair play slash goal differential. But hey, I'm not complaining, right?
Definitely a hot start. We do have another team with a, I would say, unpredictably hot start, and it was written in the stars. We saw it happen last season, and only had to happen again this season so that we could believe one more time. I mean, that Loudoun United performance against North Carolina, particularly, and I highlighted this again before the game, the fluidity between midfield and the attack just felt so perfect. Florian Vallot as the main creator, and then Bakab and Skundrick supporting him as more defensive CDM roles. And it worked perfectly, allowed him to create in all of that space that they leave him, not really having to like interlink. And that's where you have like those passing sequences where you're stuck outside the 18-yard box and you don't know what to do. But if you let Velo do what he needs to do and go forward by himself, he will get it done. And it worked perfectly. And it's two of the usual goal scorers that we see from this Loudoun team in Khalil El-Medkar and Zach Ryan. I mean, I won't say it feels more, or I should say it feels like it could be more than last season's start because, they drew or they beat Memphis on the road, who just hadn't started hot at all last season. And then they draw with San Antonio. They draw with San Antonio to start this season as well. And now they win. It's the same formula from last year, but I'm kind of buying more into this one than last year's, looking at it that way.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't agree more. It's just like, Tommy McCabe and Drew Skundrick, as you kind of mentioned, just key pivotal pieces. And it's just like them before El-Medkar in that midfield is just absolutely working wonders. And as the commentator said on the broadcast when Ryan scored his goal, Zach Ryan, of course, like who else? But I think the first goal they scored was the most impressive goal, I'd say. Just great build-up play, great ball to out the back, from into the attacking half from Khalil El-Medkar, ball in back post, diving header, just really good stuff. And on the day, they certainly, I think, deserved the result a little bit more than North Carolina FC. I think for North Carolina as well, like it's not a step back.
No.
They're still adjusting to being back in the league, I think. And for one, again, they got a great result against Charleston at home. And there was obviously like as well a 10-minute stretch there where just Oleks Anderson came on and just shattered the game in a sense
Right.
and was very unlucky not to get a goal. But he was able to make those runs in past the defensive line, and he nearly brought them back into the game, to be fair.
Yeah.
So yeah, just it's good signs from North Carolina FC, and they'll only keep improving, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, you have to take into account going a little bit farther. This is their first away game back in the USL Championship. They started at home. I think having a home game to start the season in your first season back in the championship was a fantastic opportunity for them to actually get like a good foothold in, but it's not surprising to me that they go away in their first game of, or in their second game of the season and lose to Loudoun United, who we all expect to be better, but we didn't really know how much better. It's like kind of going both ways here. You know, Loudoun United look better, North Carolina FC still adjusting. So I'm interested to see how Loudoun United play next weekend.
Yeah, I think as well, as you kind of said, it was written in the stars. Going to San Antonio, in which, yes, San Antonio are adjusting. They have a completely new system this season, but it's never an easy place to go. It's a hostile environment. That is the type of game, as I kind of mentioned with New Mexico, it's kind of the thing that is character building. It really is. It's something that really pulls a group together and really forms that chemistry and says, hey, no matter which place we are, on the road or at home, against any team, we feel confident enough to where we can get a result. And certainly against any team, especially a team like North Carolina, who are still adjusting to being back in the championship, even if they did win the USL League One title. I mean, you know, that's the type of game that you just plop it on tape and you say, that's what we're going for. That's what we want to do. That's setting the example. That's setting the standard for the rest of the season. And that's certainly what Loudoun United did.
All right, let's quick fire some games here. We'll go for three, and we'll start with whatever we think is, I would say, the most intriguing result. We've got Memphis losing at home 2-1 to the Indy 11. We've got Miami FC losing 1-0 at home to the Sacramento Republic. I don't think that's too unsurprising. And then you've got the Las Vegas Lights, unfortunately. I can't help but laugh every time. I love Vegas so much, but losing 3-1 at home to FC Tulsa. What should we start with here? Which one are you feeling the most?
I'd probably say the Memphis and Indy one. I'd say it's a good bounce back for Indy. They looked really good. And I mean, Abdoulaye Sissoko with probably one of the better goals from a center back you will ever see. I mean, my goodness, probably going to be goal of the week, most likely. I must say, because again, you just don't see that from a center back every day. But Jack Blake, you know, ferries home from the penalty spot. It's something that Indy needed coming off of you know, a loss against Oakland, which I wouldn't say was completely undeserved, but Oakland were definitely the better team overall that match. And you know, it's just a good way for Indy to kind of find their footing this season, as we most likely expected them to, right? They have such quality. They have Augustine Williams, they have Jack Blake, which, I mean, the dude is going to score goals for fun this season as a number eight. Some of the goals he was scoring preseason, just like goal scoring machine, which is just ridiculous. And for like Memphis, still on 3 points. You know, they got the win against Vegas, their first time out, but this time they struggle a little bit to deal with that Indy, the Indy possessive system, and really for them. They still have Knight Pickering. They still have a whole lot of quality in attack. They're going to be fine, I think. And they also definitely grew into the game as well. Never mind the fact that they got a red card, right? And still pulled one back.
I was gonna say, funniest thing, Oscar Jimenez sent off right
Right.
before half, and then it's gotta be our guy, Akeem Ward, getting sent off in the 97th minute.
Yeah. That's so par for the course, honestly. You know, our guy just has to get sent off, and it's just, yeah, again, par for the course.
Classic Memphis 901 week two game. I mean, it's just like you couldn't write it any better. Sacramento, Miami. Pretty straightforward, you think? I mean, it's almost like someone just scribbled it down and it came, you know, like just a thought. You know, Trevor Amon, goal scorer, Sacramento win 1-0 away. Brutal defense, like incredible defensive game from Sacramento, not allowing Miami anything. Like Miami were pinned in for it felt like at least a whole half. Sacramento just dominant. And I mean, that's what we see. We didn't see it enough against Orange County to start the year, but here it showed out into the light. And this is the real Sacramento that everyone's been so high on, I would say.
Yeah, I just thought like, it very well just like I honestly thought coming into this or when I first saw it, I'm like, oh well, this is gonna be an absolute thumping, right? And then Miami go out and they beat Colorado in the first day. I'm like, all right, hold up. I gotta give them a little bit of respect. And I don't think I get my prediction on it, but I mean, going into it, I thought it was gonna be like a 2-0 to Sacramento. And Miami were able to make it respectable in a sense, especially coming off of that win against Colorado. It's just that man again. Like, who else could it have been? I don't think it's too far of a shout to say that Trevor Immonen is going to be in the race for Golden Boot.
Yep. 2 goals.
I mean, just, well, 3 goals, and two.
Oh, that's right.
I mean,
Oh, my
yeah.
goodness.
So,
Forgot.
I don't think like, okay, so of course, like, the first season for Monterey BSC, Anthony Siaha comes in, has like 4 clean sheets in his first 4 matches. And then now Trevor Immonen comes in, has 3 goals in his first 2 matches. Have there been like any better debuts in USL Championship history besides those two? I'm sure there's others, of course, but those two, truly incredible, right? You just don't see that every day in professional soccer ever. It's just not a thing. Simple as that. Also gotta give your flowers to Danny Vidiello. That not one, not two, but triple save. Well, yeah, it was a triple save, I believe. Goodness gracious. I think that's just the USL Championship at its finest. You get 3 cracks at it, you have, 2 out of 3 chances to put it in the back of the net, 3 chances, and you can't, you think you would have a 1 out of 3/2 out of 3 chance to put it in the back of that, but nope. Danny Vidiello comes up big, stands tall, and yeah,
Too
that's
good.
the Danny Vidiello we know.
Exactly. And I was gonna say, Sacramento feels like the team that just not any striker, but any like solid striker to good striker could come in and would still do numbers at Sacramento. Like Sacramento is just set up so perfectly for a striker to thrive there.
Yeah, and well, the main thing as well with Sacramento is they're a great team, sure, but they needed that other goal scorer, right? Other than Russell Cicerone. They've got that now in Trevor Immonen. I mean,
Yep.
who else was it? Like Luis Felipe at times, Jack Gurr at times, Rodrigo Lopez at times, potentially Luther Archimed, but didn't really get the job done necessarily. Or well, he did relatively speaking, but he was only a super sub. He could only be a super sub at times. So bringing in a guy like Trevor Mann, the experience he has, that attack for Sacramento with how good of their good of a defense they have is just, yeah, they're just ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. Time to move to the inevitable. FC Tulsa 3, Las Vegas Lights 1. This is pure USL gold. I mean, Las Vegas losing feels like had to happen again. Las Vegas, I don't want to like speak it into existence, but it feels like after all of this, Vegas now could go like the 6, 7 games unwinless or however many that they started last season. That would be very unfortunate, to be completely honest. I hope that they get some results going forward. I think that would look good on them and the league that someone can come in and have immediate success. I mean, we've kind of already seen that with Hartford, I would say, in their most recent months, especially after last season. So that's been nice to see, even though they've only played one game. But either way, for Tulsa as well, it's the main guys. It's Stefan Stojanovic, who we highlighted earlier this offseason as a key figure. And then, of course, Philip Goodrum. who is hoping to have a much better, I mean, coming hot off of Memphis to Tulsa after wanting a move abroad. That was 2023 was a pretty rough year for him.
Yeah, I mean that's about as good as you can hit a ball, honestly. I mean, that thing was a missile. It didn't dip, didn't bend, just straight roofed into the top of the net. Absolutely nothing Austin Wormell could do about it. But yeah, it just Las Vegas frustrate me because I look at that team and I'm like, you know, they have a little bit of quality in some places. I mean, Solomon Asante, however good he's been, a little bit aging in a sense. But yeah, they just I mean, they put up 22 shots, which is still pretty decent, but it never felt like they were super threatening. Kind of almost like Phoenix in a way, sort of. Like they were able to get shots, they were able to get chances. Ultimately, that just happens in the USL Championship. But can you be clinical? Can you have that cutting edge? And then also just simply, can you get into the box? Because if you're just taking shots from outside the opponent's 18, it's not really going to do much unless you have a moment of brilliance, which Las Vegas just simply don't have that at this point. The only person that could potentially do that is, again, an aging Solomon Asante, which you're just not going to get that from him at this age, I don't think.
Valentin Noel as well, someone to look to for those
Valentin Noel, yeah.
movers.
I mean, he had the moment of brilliance against Memphis, but in the end, those only come few and far between.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move to our away wins. We have three massive away wins to follow that up with. We have El Paso nil, Louisville City FC 1. We have Colorado Springs 1, Detroit City FC 2. I think the biggest story is obviously there, but you could also argue it's Pittsburgh Riverhounds 0, Orange County SC 2. For me, the biggest, where's the biggest story for you? And then I'll go where the biggest story for me is, because I think we're on the same wavelength for this one.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely a Detroit and Colorado, simply because from the fact that we just didn't know where the goals were potentially going to come from. I mean, Elvis Amo potentially, right? But then again, he had such a poor 2023 season with Hartford. Whereas Pittsburgh, we kind of expected it in a sense, especially early on in the season. They were going to struggle. I mean, they hit the crossbar, sure, and had like 12 shots, but it's just kind of like it's par for the course. You kind of expected it. So, I mean, Detroit and Colorado, this just, it was a definitely an interesting match. Colorado could have had two, most likely. I don't know how Malik Foster did not score on that one breakaway. The one goal they scored was definitely a gorgeous goal. Pulled back from the right side of the 18 and put it into the top of the net. And then Detroit, you know, they showed some tremendous fight, and you know, they got the goal in the end, in like the 18th minute or something like that. Elvis Amo, who else could it be, honestly, right? Coming back to his former club, silencing the crowd there. Another gorgeous goal as well, cut back, and just low into the bottom corner. And then the red card. Definitely, well, it was a second yellow, but definitely a second yellow. It was a late challenge, and you know, it was Roca, no, Santos that got sent off. So not the greatest moment for him. Especially since it's a defender, right? You're gonna be down in your back line. And Detroit just kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and eventually it paid off. In the scrappiest of ways, probably Connor Rutz from his ass just bundles it over the line. But you know, just a great result for Detroit. I'm really happy for them because they have deserved at least more than one goal in matches for like the past, I don't know, like the past two seasons
Since
or
they've
whatever.
been here, since they've
Right,
been here.
right. It's like they deserve it so much. Their fans put so much passion into everything. I think there were some that actually traveled there to Colorado not correct? Behind that,
I believe so, yeah.
yeah. If you look behind the goal, they're celebrating the first goal. So, just really awesome stuff for them, and it's definitely too early to kind of panic about the switchbacks, I'd say. But early,
I was gonna ask that next.
I mean, early on, it's early doors, sure. But I also do think they need to figure it out pretty quickly because they have so much quality, in Ronaldo, Damas, and those guys up top. It's just like, yeah, they need to figure it out. And I think, like, again, those fullbacks, Coa Santos and Aiden Roka, really good fullbacks on the outside, and to have one sent off, just a massive blow in that sense.
Yeah. Honestly, one of the things that also kind of surprised me was the switchback's attendance. I won't lie, it looked a bit sparse in there. I wouldn't be too concerned about it. I mean, it is still, March in Colorado Springs.
They were I think it was 6,000 plus, which is actually, it didn't look like
Wow.
6,000 plus, but then again, what their stadium holds, like, what, like 10,000 plus or something like that. And then again, there was also a winter storm that had just happened, which, huge shout out to the fans that came out and shoveled the snow and got the stands ready
Yeah.
for that. Yeah, so awesome stuff there. It's just too bad they didn't get the result in the end for those fans, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Also, of note, I would say is that Miami did show up with 1,000+, and Las Vegas did get over 1,500. I honestly think that's actually, I'm being honest, that I think that it's actually like a good look. It's consistent.
That's more surprising than how the switchbacks have started the season, honestly.
Wow. I honestly think Miami being able to sustain over 1,000
I'm sorry, Las Vegas fans and Miami fans.
for their second week in a row, that's good. That makes me think that they could do it for at least 10 to 15 games a season. I do think that there will be a majority, not a majority, but quite a few games that dip under 1,000 in attendance, but it's
Here,
good luck for them still.
here's the one thing with Miami. And we're not going to try and get too off topic, of course, but for how expensive it is to attend an Inter Miami game, right? Miami, the Miami FC. I mean, it's a good option for kids as well, I must say, right? I think they could potentially pull a few people there in that sense, and that's probably just one thing we didn't consider, I guess. So yeah, that they had that going for them at least.
I also don't think we ever took into consideration how many MLS fans or fans of Miami might be turned off by everything that's going on with MLS and Inter Miami, and thinking, we could turn to an alternative. And there is a fun alternative in the Miami FC, which is still fantastic quality. And it's, like you said, a lot cheaper. And it would be a great option. So that could be something. That also happens, but obviously I have no idea. Just a hypothetical, I guess. But it does seem realistic that that could be a possibility to happen.
Yeah, most definitely. And like, they just it they've kind of been in a vicious cycle, right, Miami? It's just like, and they had such a talented roster there for a few years, making the playoffs and then just missing out on the playoffs last season, that you could kind of look at it and say, well, if they can build a little bit of a community there and be well established in the community, what's to say they can't really extend their roots even deeper?
Oh man. All right. I think we're going to take a break and come back to our next two away games. All right. We're back, and we have to start with none other than the one that we called. We just said it before we hopped back on. Pittsburgh, currently goalless in two games to start the season. That felt like one of the more obvious plot points to Pittsburgh's start is that. Who is going to score for them, especially when you lose, as we all remember, Albert Dzikwa, 20 goal scorer last year, and nothing has shown through yet. Pittsburgh going more with Dieng and Kizza. They've gone for that lineup two games in a row, and it hasn't worked for two games. If that doesn't spell already that you might need to move something around, I don't know what would, I guess. So, but Orange County, to their credit, come in and capitalize. Pittsburgh are still pretty solid defensively, I would say, but it still doesn't pan out. And Orange County come in, two shots, really, two goals, and they leave with 3 points. Pretty good weekend for them.
Yeah, really good road trip, and 4 points from your first six, both matches on the road.
Two,
One
Sacramento,
against,
two.
yeah, point of Sacramento, and then going on the road to, again, as we called a what was going to be a less than ideal Pittsburgh team performance wise.
To be clear, though, Pittsburgh is still a hell of a place to play,
It's
no matter what.
incredible. It's incredible atmosphere. It's a daunting atmosphere, and their fans, they always bring it. No matter what,
And
right?
Highmark is wild. I love that. I love that
Yeah,
place.
it's just disappointing in a sense that the players' play hasn't really matched the fans. Haven't really given them. Although to be fair as well, they had a majority of the opportunities, right? Had more shots, a lot more shots than Orange County, at least. Even hit the woodwork. I mean, Robbie Mertz nearly gives them their first goal of the season, to be fair.
Good man,
But
Bobby Merckx.
yeah, the main man. But if you're Orange County, you're clinical in the end, and you took your chances when it mattered most. And in my personal opinion, if you don't take your chances, you don't deserve to win. Simple as that. I don't care if you hit the crossbar once or if you hit the woodwork once. If you don't take your chances, you just simply don't deserve to win. So
Damn. Come in hot.
in the end, Orange County, two really well worked goals as well, I must say. That ball across to the back post, just incredible, sublime for that first goal in the first minute. And then that second goal was also really good. Ryan Dogman, great. I thought Sofyan Jafal really looked good, especially. And Orange County just have a solid roster overall. It's just par for the course, because again, we predicted Pittsburgh to really struggle, especially early on in the season. But I think these problems, they're still going to persist. Again, as I kind of mentioned, Kizza up top, and DNA. I don't think Kizza is that guy for you up top, and DNA as well, because I feel like Kizza really, really was a player that worked off of Dequa, right?
Yeah.
He's not a guy that you can put up top there with an inexperienced DNA and say, that's where I think we're going to get our goals from. I just don't think that worked. And I think Bob Lilly is going to recognize that. And again, as he said, shuffle some things around. And then it'll be intriguing to see where they kind of go from there, especially tactics wise. Because yeah, they need to get on it quickly.
Yeah. On the other side, though, something I've seen. 60th minute substitution. Just listen to this talent that's coming on for Orange County. Thomas Among, Cameron Dunbar, and Christian Sorto come on for Ethan Zubak, Bryce Jamison, and Brian Olowski. To be able to flip your whole kind of attacking scheme like that, and then it works out, and Cameron Dunbar scores off a Christian Sorto assist. It works out perfectly. Like to have that flexibility, Orange County are in a fantastic place right now. And that's why they've been able to score four goals in two games. This is looking to be early, obviously statistically one of the more higher scoring teams this season, but it's something that you can easily follow just looking at how they play and what they can bring off the bench and do tactically in the matter of minutes. It's wild.
Yeah, that three that come on, I mean, on any other day that could be your starting three up top, which is just incredible to say. Any other team in this league probably takes that, relatively speaking. I mean, as a Monterey Bay FC fan, I'd probably take that as well. Thomas Amog is just an incredible player. Cameron Dunbar, really good striker. really good center forward, has been in the league, done it before. Christian Soto, kind of the same thing, brings that experience, right? And so, yeah, to have that luxury, it does absolute wonders for you. And especially in a match where potentially if you are struggling for a goal and you need that goal to kind of get you back into the match, if you have those guys coming off the bench, good Lord, good luck. Good luck to the opposition, because that front three is incredibly scary.
All right, we'll head back out west. We'll head to the last away game here. It is, of course, El Paso nil, Louisville one. El Paso, the big thing there, currently winless in three to start the season. And I said something a bit earlier, I think, that I think it is incredible that El Paso have been, it feels like they've been thrown in the deep end with three games in 7 days to start the season. And they do not benefit from it at all. And that's obviously going to a slow start against Hartford will also contribute to that. So really kind of, it didn't really feel like free fall. They had a, I would say, a great result looking at things against Monterey Bay, but to lose at home to Louisville, to two Eastern Conference competition, that's a good, these are good opportunities to make up points that you might lose in the slog that is the Western Conference usually. So disappointing there. And then Wilson Harris getting his 50th goal. Absolutely huge for him and for Louisville. I mean, they continue their dominance. They look fantastic in the first game of the season. I mean, it's typical for them though. We expect this from them.
Yeah, and what a milestone that is. Just incredible for a player of his age in this league, which is so incredibly physical and tough to play in. Just again, what a milestone, what a player he is. And again, kind of coming into the season with Cameron Lancaster going out, Oscar Jimenez going out, we were expecting him to really take a leap forward, and he has shown so far in this first match that he'll pop up in certain situations, like that situation with the ball in from Sean Tosh, where it didn't really look all too threatening. I mean, Tosh was down the right side, but puts a great ball in. I forget who it was who potentially also tried to get on the end of it, but in the end, it falls to Harris and just heads it in into the bottom corner. Beautifully done. But like for El Paso, it's just like, I don't know anymore, man. I don't know whether to back them or not. I will say this, even though it's three matches at home, and this is certainly not an excuse you can use because, well, it's three matches at home. Having to manage a Saturday, Wednesday, and Saturday fixture schedule, even if it's at home, that's really hard to manage,
Yeah.
to be fair. And I think it certainly showed, especially in the match we played against them. It was clear to me from some of the substitutes they made. Arun Basulovic comes on in like the 55th minute or something like that. They made a substitution in the 45th. Also, Brandon Craig gets injured in the Louisville game, I believe. It's clear that they were going for a more game management style, fitness wise. And I think that potentially hurt them in a sense against us because they didn't have their best 11, 60 minutes throughout. In that second half, they grew into the game against us, I'd say, and started to kind of possess a little bit more and push us back. But then again, once they took those guys off, that's when we grew into that match, as well as bringing in Traeger and Arschmidt on and really starting to kind of take back control of the game. And then the game against Hartford was just, it's a case of a little bit unluckiness. But my main concern for El Paso is their defensive imbalance at times is concerning. And they need to figure that out, especially for a player like Balo Akinyode, who is a really good player on that left side. But they desperately need to find that balance in their defensive shape if they want to find any success here early on in the season.
Do you think El Paso are are among the teams that need to worry the most after the opening week, 2 weeks here? I would say honestly, probably.
I would say probably Yes, as well. I think the one thing they have going for them is Jeremy Kyrie coming in. I think he could potentially be a solution to those defensive imbalances at times. So really for them, they have a good attack. They have Amanda Moreno, who is a New Mexico United legend. They have Tumi Mochibane, who is a USL Championship legend, or just in general experienced USL Championship players. They need to figure it out and quickly, because the meat grinder that is the Western Conference, when you get into those summer fixtures, it's hard. It really is hard. And the fact, again, that they played three matches at home, that means there's already three matches gone and they've been at home. So there's only 14 more matches at home and then 17 away. You're already at an imbalance here. And playing on the road is certainly much harder than playing at home.
Yeah. All right. We've got two games left here. And they are, I would say, pretty in and about the same. But we'll head here. We'll head to Oakland first, I think. Oakland won, Charleston Battery won. Nick Markkanen back on the score sheet. Great to see. But Oakland come back 4 points in their opening two games. Is, I would say, best case scenario. I mean, I know it's two home games, but I said earlier as well, it's these Eastern Conference games, especially at home, where you need to take advantage of it because, they are making that cross-country journey, and this is where you make up points that you might lose out in your Western Conference games because those are, oh, I would say, a lot more difficult than these Eastern Conference home games. So Oakland have done fantastic here. Charleston was always going to be the main one because they were always going, to me, always going to be that team that could unlock that Oakland defense that we know to be difficult to break down. Indy also score a goal, but Oakland are just able to actually like compress them, put them down, and just counter press there. And that is an of course, what did Indy in the end? So this to me feels like best case scenario for Oakland.
Yeah, definitely agree. Just against a really high quality opponent in Charleston Battery, you look at the guys they have, Aaron Malloy, up top they have Jackson Conway, and then players on the wing, like Markkanen, gets the goal in the end. And he's gonna be a really important player for them this season because of the fact that they lost a guy like Fidel Barajas. I think Nick Markkanen is due to really step into that role that Fidel Barajas had and kind of just be that X factor, be that player that can take half chances and turn them into goals, right? Those wonder goals that Fidel Barajas scored all of last season. So really for them, it's a good result on the road. I mean, you look at it, 2 points from your first two matches. Maybe a little bit disappointing to not have gotten the result, or 3 points against North Carolina coming into the league. More of a good result for North Carolina than it is for Charleston. But going cross country, now that's a different story. Facing a team like Oakland, who looks so good so far, and as you kind of said, stifled that Charleston team in a sense. So getting that result is a good start. Good start for Charleston and Oakland as a whole.
I don't know if I'm the only one, but every time I love looking at the field at Oakland Stadium. The highlighter green is phenomenal.
Okay, so they had a, I believe they just had a solid green last season, right? And of course, they attained the Oakland Coliseum, which is awesome to see. They're going to be playing their matches there next season. But I guess what they did is they took the turf from Laney, and then they put it on the field at Pioneer, which is interesting, right?
Awesome.
Like, I loved Lanny's turf. Honestly, it looked awesome, but you know they had the problem with the turf last season, and so they had to move to Pioneer. It feels like almost a middle finger to Lanny, kind of like, hey, F you, right? You kind of screwed over us by not getting the turf correct, right? And so, yeah, it's just good to see them have that stadium. And it's a little bit awkward, as he kind of said. I guess as well, like when our fans went there for the away match last season in Oakland, the steps are steep, really steep, because it's almost on a hillside in a sense.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's kind of just like embedded into the hill,
That's
which is
right.
kind of
Yeah,
weird.
yeah,
And there's no stands on one side as well. So the way the camera is facing, that's the only stand that you see in the stadium, which holds 5,000 people, basically. So yeah, but overall, good stuff there. And yeah, they just continue to roll, Oakland.
Also of note, I want to say two things regarding camera angles because it's awesome. The Cashman Field angle, so much better. They're on the opposite side of the stadium now. I love it. And you can still see the big blue wall, which is fantastic. I love that wall.
I think didn't they have that camera angle last season? I swear.
They might have, I don't necessarily remember, but I
I
know.
think I think it looks different because they have suites there now on that other side. I mean, they have a new like almost seating section on the other side. So
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know,
possibly,
guys.
but I'm going back to their old days where like the camera was behind the bench.
The first away match in Oakland we had, which was 2022, of course, it was behind the bench, and that was really, really weird, honestly. That camera angle was, by the way, they have some of the more poor quality cameras, I'd say, in the USL Championship. So
I don't think that's unfair to say. Also, we don't talk about USL League One, but I still do watch it. The CV Fuego game, where it looked like the lights were out on the broadcast for like 30 or so minutes, I think it was, is amazing. I also love, I'm pretty sure their stadium is under construction. So there's just like one side, there's like no fans visible. There's the one side that has a couple of fans behind the goal, the other side is completely empty. And then all the fans are like behind the camera. So we can still hear them. It's the best thing ever.
yeah, and I was able to catch Spokane in
Yes.
Richmond,
That was awesome.
and their stadium. Wow, Spokane. I mean, it's a really nice venue. 5,000 seater. The one stand. Well, it's not really a stand. It's just a wall, and it was on the left side of the broadcast. I'm like, that's a little interesting. It's like I've never seen that. But yeah, and they have a little supporter section on the which was going to the right of the broadcast. And then overall they had a really good crowd. Loved their jerseys too. I like it when teams incorporate their badge into their jerseys. Wink wink, Loudoun United. So yeah, just really awesome stuff there. And USL League One just continues to grow, and it's awesome to see.
Yeah, I also saw something that they're planning on announcing like at least 5 to 8 more teams by the end of this year, which is, if it's true, obviously for the USL Championship, we still have Des Moines, we still have Milwaukee, and now we have Brooklyn coming through, and of course Jacksonville in 2025. That'll be next season.
Also, so there's, I believe there's Texoma for USL League One. I believe there's Santa Barbara for League One, if I'm not correct.
Santa Barbara, okay. We never talk about USL League One news, but Santa Barbara, after they announced, I think it might have been a 6 months to a year after they announced their inaugural season, they just went completely like offline, didn't post anything. But recently, of course, they came out, said that something was planned, I believe, for the near future, regarding their inclusion in the 2025 USL League One season. So
Yeah, I mean,
That might be like, I don't know if that will actually be happening or not, which
yeah,
is wild.
I think another one is Antelope Valley, if I'm not correct. I could be completely wrong. I think there was another, and I believe that's in that's in California as well. Which, in terms of like the balance in the USL League One, there aren't a whole lot of West Coast teams, to be fair.
Yeah.
So the fact you have Spokane now, and then potentially Santa Barbara Sky, and again, as I said, I believe it's Antelope Valley, is the name, and then Texoma. It's good to see that kind of balance out now.
There's also USL Arkansas coming
Yeah, that one
Northern
too. Little
Arkansas.
Little Rock, I believe.
No, it's Northern Arkansas up in like Fayetteville, I believe. Like Northwestern.
I could have sworn it was Little Rock, but
And then, of course, there's not as much as it was a couple months ago, but there's continuous talk with Union Omaha's new stadium, of them coming up to the USL Championship, which that would be a massive loss for USL League One, and I don't necessarily think I'd want to see that over joining the USL Championship. I think I'd rather Union Omaha stay down in USL League One for now and keep building that league as like the like model team of that league.
they'll be the Louisville City FC of USL League One.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I want them to be. They need to be like pioneer there.
And then hopefully as well, come when they vote for promotion relegation, that'll be that opportunity because they will certainly have the stadium and the capability to get promoted and fit right into the USL Championship.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Charlotte Independence, they, of course, fell from or moved down from the USL Championship down to USL League One. Bit unfortunate, but they still have a brilliant model down there. I mean, they are still playing well. I believe they lost this past weekend. The only games I follow were the Fuego game and the Spokane game.
They lost 2-1 to 1 Knox.
That's right. One Knox are an impressive club as well. My goodness. I followed them a bit during their inaugural season and like their final USL League Two season. So watching that process was actually like awesome to see. And they got such incredible players in their first year. And they didn't do too bad, if I'm recalling correctly.
Yeah, and then you have Lexington as well.
Yeah.
They've announced their plans for that stadium, which looks absolutely beautiful. And the touristy city that Lexington is, they will pull 100%. So not to mention as well, it is prior to them being, in the USL League One, they were like a development academy almost. So they already have that in place.
Yeah.
They have all the foundation built and all that stuff. So really awesome to see.
And they have Cameron Lancaster now.
Yeah, they have two former Louisville City players, although to be fair, one of them is also on loan,
Right.
Kano, so.
Yeah, I mean that's not much. I think the best thing is I don't think there's like any hate between the two of them. I think it's just like, he moved there. That's what happens now, He's moved on and is Kentucky soccer history right now. Least that's what I'm getting from it. Maybe I don't know. Maybe there's some hidden hate there, but I could be wrong. We still have one game to get to. And this is
We went a bit off of the rails there, but we also got to show again, as we got to show USL League One a bit of love. We don't talk about it enough, to be fair.
yeah. It's Tampa Bay 2, San Antonio FC 2. San Antonio in back-to-back 2-all draws, which I feel like is their trademark score at this point. I feel like I see this every other week because they have the model to go forward and score plenty of goals a game, but that also leaves them a bit thin on defense when they go forward, so they get caught out. And of course, Tampa Bay dominated a majority of this game up until about like the final 10 minutes when San Antonio were able to get back into it. So you also love to see Cal Jennings on the score sheet and Manuel Arteaga. I mean, your two focal points, your two main guys. That's about as good as it gets, at least going forward.
Yeah, I think probably the most impressive performance. His name starts with a Y, and I'm just like not gonna try and pronounce it because I'm gonna fail so miserably. But he was playing on the right side for this match. He set up Arteaga's second goal with a beautiful cutback. was able to get around the San Antonio left back on that left side there, skinned him and just got down to the byline and pulled it back. Arguably as well, could have had a penalty. That player I'm talking about. What is his name? I can't remember. But yeah, as you kind of mentioned, Arteaga getting his goal, really good movement into the box. I kind of honestly saw that coming as the play was developing. I'm like, oh boy, here comes Manuel Arteaga into the box, completely unmarked. And lo and behold, he just gets a little flick on it, tucks it away beautifully. And then the first goal that Tampa Bay scored, Blake Bodderly, just, I mean, what's more to say? He has a wand of a left foot, puts that ball in, flicked on and in by Cal Jennings, and nothing Pablo Cisniega could do. But yeah, as you kind of mentioned, like for Tampa Bay, the final 10 minutes, almost a nightmare, really. And if it wasn't for Forrest Lasso making that last ditch tackle towards the end there, following a turnover off the back line from San Antonio or Tampa Bay, well, San Antonio could have very well taken all 3 points, which would have been very undeserved, I think, in a sense, because Tampa Bay played so well for so long in that match. And San Antonio just eventually found a way. They just kept hammering away in those final 10 minutes. And it's Manly that got the goal, I believe, which is that, I believe that's his first USL championship goal, if I'm not correct. No,
I have no idea.
I could be completely wrong, but if it is, what a way to score your first goal.
Yeah. Two good response opportunities next weekend, which, by the way, we were saying next weekend looks insane. Like, following these first 2 weeks, it looks absolutely wild. But San Antonio hosts the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, and Tampa Bay go away to North Carolina FC. Two good response opportunities there. I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa Bay found a way to find 3 points, or found a way to get 3 points in North Carolina next weekend. And then San Antonio against the Switchbacks team that has lost their opening two games. And San Antonio has been a very difficult place to play for the Switchbacks recently. We're looking at maybe, I mean, I know the first two games for San Antonio have been four goal in the sense that there's been four goals in the game, but this feels like a game where San Antonio could score four. And we're looking at the Switchbacks, like, where do we go from here?
Yeah, so just real quick on Kari Manley. He did he has scored. He has scored before. So I don't know what I honestly was thinking. Moving off Carter Manley, this sets up for a really interesting match because, as he kind of said, where does Colorado go from here? They're coming into an environment in which, of course, they lost 1-0 in the playoffs last season. I think this match has the potentiality to kind of either be a draw or then just be a complete blowout in San Antonio's favor, because just the way that Colorado has started, they're going to be hungry. They're going to be vying for a result, I do believe. They're not going to sit back in this one by any means. And they're going to try and take their chances when they come. I mean, they still have really good quality. I mean, it's just like, that's the thing that baffles me. They have Ronaldo Damas as their center forward, right?
Yeah.
But I think right now, San Antonio, the more, even though they are in a new system under Alan Marcina this season, the more well-gelled team, the more complete team currently, I think in turn it probably goes 3-1 in San Antonio's favor, honestly.
That does feel like a solid result pick. I'm looking forward to it. Another game, we'll finish here with what I think could be the most fun game next weekend, and it's Detroit City FC Loudoun United. Detroit, from what I've seen with one game, so I mean, I have a very small sample size, but it looks like they have goals in them. They actually were able to build up and execute like actual plays and not just worry about pumping it forward or trying to just toss the ball into the box and see what happens from there. This felt really well oiled, so I'm kind of second guessing, are Detroit going to be able to score this year? I mean, Elvis Amo is a huge addition if you can get him working in your system. And then Loudoun United, who have scored 5 goals in their opening 2 games, 2 away to San Antonio. That's always hard to do. And they get 3 at home against North Carolina. And North Carolina played damn near lights out against the Charleston Battery. So that was a bit of a surprise, even though, like we said, what was I saying about? Yeah, either way, I just completely lost my train of thought. I don't know.
Happens. But like it's shaping up to be a really good match. I mean, Keyworth is like we said it before, it's one of the best atmospheres in US soccer. Like 100%. The Northern Guard is going to be absolutely rocking, especially since they're scoring goals now.
Yeah.
It looks like. I kind of mentioned it. Before the season started, if they can get the players in place for Elvis Amo to get service into the box to him
Yeah.
and they can get him in form, look out because he can score goals. And then also if Connor Rutz, of all people, can also contribute, those types of players, then by all means, Detroit will be a force to be reckoned with this season in the Eastern Conference. And I think Danny Diccio, so far, what he's done, you can just kind of see they're well drilled, they're well disciplined, and they just look overall really, really solid. I think this one, I think I'll say a 2-1 Detroit win. I think it's going to be a really close match. I think if anything, if Loudoun do get a result from this, it'll be a 1-1. I think Zach Ryan to score is not too bad of a shout. Because
Yeah.
Zach is Zach Ryan, right? Overall, this is going to be an incredible match. It's going to be close. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely. I honestly see more goals in this game. I see a 3-2 Detroit City FC win. I think Detroit looked well enough, for me at least. They looked good enough in their win against the Switchbacks for me to put them over Loudoun United, because that is a difficult place to go, even though Loudoun did get a draw against San Antonio. But for me, I think the way Detroit is a hard place to go. I've been to Keyworth. It is a it's an awesome place. It's honestly like it's a high school stadium. It's in the middle of Hamtramck. I love the city of Hamtramck. It's phenomenal. And the stadium is like damn near falling apart in some areas, but it is just,
Probably
it's a beautiful.
also one of the smaller USL stadiums in terms of width. Well, not field length, but corner to corner,
Yeah.
right? I'd say.
Also, love the white wall. I love walls. I love big walls, in stadiums. It's the best thing ever. So big
They
props.
have trains. They have trains that go by. I have
They
immense respect
do.
for any team that has a train go by when a game is going on.
And like Highmark has obviously the train by the river, but the train for Detroit is just like in the middle of a field by the stadium.
It's you know it's and then on the left side as well of where the camera is, you just have a whole entire just like neighborhood,
Yeah,
and that's
and
also
so.
awesome because the neighborhood allows them to play there, right? I mean, you don't have all these Karens saying, "Oh, I don't want the light pollution and the noise pollution or whatever." So, I'm sorry if you have that point of view, if I made fun of you, but I'm sorry, that's a stupid view.
They also have a spool attached to the side, which is just awesome. I mean, it doesn't get more USL than that.
Yeah, this episode has been about as wild as the first 2 weeks of the USL, so, you know.
Oh my God, I love Detroit. I feel like there's one more stadium that I can't think of that's just absolutely hilarious for no reason. Oh, it's Indy. I've been there too. That's a funny place. It's just in the middle of a track. It's hilarious. I love it though.
Yeah, and they're getting their own stadium soon. So,
Yes.
awesome to see.
Oh my gosh. All right. This is where we're gonna end it. This is where we're gonna end it. Thank you guys so much for tuning back in. Next episode, this Saturday morning, we're gonna be looking at some USL players abroad. For our first mid to end of week episode, it's gonna be great. Noah may or may not be there. We'll have to see, but he's back. He's always been here. It's been like we're getting the streak going.
Yeah, we'll see potentially. I travel back home on Thursday, so looking forward to that. And I will be there for the March 24th game against Rhode Island. So really looking forward to that.
Oh yeah. All right. Thank you guys again for listening, and we will see you guys soon.